that we need to look into and talk more about. And I think the thing that I look at as well is that coming from a medical background, and you sit on the Sober Home Task Force, and I was thinking about who's actually there. It's made up of concerned citizens. It's made up of attorneys. It's made up of providers. But something that we look for is, where is the medical community?
That's true. It's very disappointing not to see the medical community being involved here, because that they are the key. They are controlling this narcotic epidemic, that we're an opioid epidemic in our state and in our nation. And physicians need to be educated transparently, and as do the patients, okay? We need to make sure that every patient knows when they're being prescribed painkillers post-op for a toothache or whatever it is, that they are being prescribed pharmaceutical-grade synthetic heroin. If that conversation is had with the physician, you know what, the patient may change their mind. If our physicians would actually perhaps consider employing the recommendations of the American Medical Association for co-prescribing naloxone, which will reverse a drug poisoning overdose, that would be great, because that's another way to educate both the physician and the patient. Having that conversation, if I was the patient, I'd say, well, isn't there something else you could give me that isn't as risky? So we need to look at the getting a true informed consent right with regard to what a patient is being prescribed.
Well, and that's, I think, the thing that I listen to as you're talking is that we're referencing in the industry as patients, and that's really, from a standpoint, what we need to be concentrating and focusing in on, that these are people that have a medical condition, much similar as it would be as if they were diabetic, if they were cancer or something like that. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be going to a commercial break here. We're going to be listening to one of our sponsors, and we're going to continue our conversation. So for those of you who are joining us, this is the Family Center for Recovery show, and I'm your guest, Peter Nathan, and this is my good friend, Maureen Killian, and we're talking legislation. We're talking about what's going on with the House and the Senate and some of the things that have passed and where we're going to be going in the future. So we greatly appreciate you joining us and making us a part of your Sunday afternoon, and we'll be back in just a moment from our commercial break, which is coming up pretty soon. So I hope you're enjoying your day, whether that's in the car, at the beach, or if you're at the golf course or playing tennis or wherever you may be. So we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Family Center for Recovery show. Find out more about the Family Center for Recovery on facebook.com/Family Center for Recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. We'll be right back.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
I'm Tiffany. I have some tips for you on how to quit smoking like I did. First, I did some reading about it. I found a lot of great advice on how to quit smoking and picked out the ways I thought would work best for me. I started by setting a quit date. Then I threw out my ashtrays, lighters, and matches. I did other things too, like exercising more, and it worked. But I'd still get cravings, especially on long car rides. To help me with that, I put a picture of my mother in my car. She died of lung cancer from smoking cigarettes when I was only 16. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter. That picture of my mother reminds me that I don't want to miss all the things my daughter is going to do in her life, including turning 17.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Welcome back. back to the Family Center for Recovery radio show. If you wish to share this broadcast with a friend, you'll find a link at the Family Center for Recovery's website, FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Well, thank you, and we're back for joining us here on this Sunday afternoon. You're listening to the Family Center for Recovery show, and I'm your guest, Peter Nathan, or I'm your host, rather. I'm your host, and my guest is Maureen Killian. And what we're talking about is legislature. We're talking about things that are going on in both the House and the Senate here in the state of Florida, and we're recapping and going over some things. And what we were talking about as far as doctors and their involvement. So, Maureen, your thoughts?
Again, I just have to reiterate that it's this is a physician-controlled epidemic, and it's an addiction epidemic. This is not an abuse epidemic. These prescription pills do not need to be abused for you to become, you know, addicted. Taken as prescribed does and causes addiction. And if you read the label, FDA approved, taken as prescribed, can cause addiction. So we have to be very, very careful with these medications that are prescribed so freely. And I'm very concerned not only with the younger population that is being extremely hit hard with addiction, but I'm also concerned with our Medicare patients. Those overdoses coming into our hospitals every day are just unacceptable. Any drug, legally prescribed drug poisoning overdose coming into our hospitals is absolutely unacceptable. It's preventable. These are controlled substances. That's an inherent part of a physician's medical license and DEA license, is to control controlled substances, something we've lost in this country.
And that's the thing that really caught me. I can't remember what commission or meeting I was at, and it dawned on me, and the information was presented, I believe it was about our elderly population and Medicare and painkillers. I call them painkillers. And that's an area that people really just aren't aware on. So could you explain a little bit more, Maureen, as far as...
Yes, you know, unfortunately, the prescription drug monitoring database is clouded in stigma of, you know, doctor shoppers. But if you look at the whole picture, the big picture, you know, our Medicare patients see probably up to five medical specialists, you know, from a cardiologist to a pulmonologist to a primary care to perhaps an orthopedic to perhaps, say, an arthritis doctor. Are they all aware of what's being prescribed, and are they all aware of the drug interactions? Are they aware of the FDA label changes that happen every week or 2 weeks? So the prescription drug monitoring database is an extremely valuable tool for every physician to use, for every patient, any patient. It doesn't matter. But what's happening is, with the media, everybody thinks this is abuse. So there's a subconscious decision-making aspect when a physician is prescribing, by perhaps looking at their patient, and it's, you know, Grandma Jane. Grandma Jane's not going to abuse her medication. Grandma Jane doesn't have to abuse her medication. Taking it as prescribed, as directed, can and does cause addiction. And abuse is a behavior of addiction. So we have to get the horse in front of the cart here and call this epidemic what it is. It's an addiction epidemic.
And that's the area where somebody such as Dr. Robert A. Moran, who's a triple board certified psychiatrist, that understands that this is really more so a brain disease. It involves, as far as things that prefrontal cortex and the effects that chemicals have, as far as addiction, which is a different view than most people out there take when it comes to something like this.
So there's a doctor that actually is like supporting and aware of the effects that chemicals have that we swallow. We swallow more chemicals at the direction of our physician than we'll ever eat in our foods. Who's this physician?
There actually is, and he's right over on Seacrest Boulevard in Lantana, Florida. His name is Dr. Robert A. Moran. So there is a doctor that does have and is dialed in as far as what our patients and what people actually need as far as treatment goes. what I'd like to talk to about a little bit more is that the demand and where we are for these prescriptions and things along those lines. And if we're able to curb our demand as far as the usage, then from a supply standpoint, that would probably have a dramatic impact and also be another route that we could go. From a standpoint of what other things that might be out there, people have pain, and I know there's different avenues that people could from a standpoint, because, look, it's a fact of life. As we get older, we have surgeries, we have things. So maybe from your medical perspective, could you share with us some our listeners some of the other alternatives that are out there?
Well, there's plenty of other alternatives. You know, your therapy modules, you know, physical therapy and those types of things. The Alexander technique is another popular one. Yoga, and just mindfulness, thinking, you know, positive. Your mental health, if you're in a depressed mood, your pain could be exacerbated. But, you know, we've got to look at the difficulties in getting those services and the insurance industry and what they're willing to pay for. We've become so complacent that in society to just, like, pop a pill is just going to fix every problem. Okay, so if you have pain in your wrist and you're popping a pill, those chemicals just don't, you know, aren't smart enough just to go right to your wrist. In fact, they go through your brain.
So if you're just joining us on this Sunday afternoon, maybe you're out in the car, maybe you're at the beach, you have tuned in, and we thank you for joining us. And if you have been listening, you are listening to the Family Center for Recovery show, and I am your host, Peter Nathan. And with us today is Maureen Killian. We're talking legislation, and we're talking about solutions. We're talking about positive things that we can do as far as a society. I guess that's the other thing, too, is as a society, thinking back, I mean, I guess the answer has been if somebody has a headache, what do? We take, what, an aspirin. And it seems as if, to a certain extent, that's been the answer, is that we defer to the pill and things along those lines to solve. But there are other alternatives. And from society, I think what we need to kind of look at and explore some of these other options that are out there. So, Maureen, your thoughts as far as things that we can possibly do, or awareness and getting people to see what else was available.
Absolutely. There's other alternatives. And we have got to get out of our conditioning that, you know, a pill solves everything, when in fact a pill, in many cases, due to the adverse effects, causes another pill, and those adverse effects causes another pill, and now you have interactions which causes another pill. So we have to be very cognizant of that, and we really need cooperation from our prescribing community to reevaluate what we are doing and how we are doing it. And particularly, it's well documented in the United States that our prescribing community needs to reevaluate their prescribing behaviors, because 80% of the entire world's opioids are consumed in the United States, yet the United States population is only 5%. Of less than 5% of the world's population. So obviously, I cannot fathom these numbers. They're true, but we have a over-medicated society, and obviously a pandemic of pain in the United States. So what is it in the United States that's causing all this pain that isn't happening in other countries around the world?
You know, I guess the thing I look at is what are the other answers? And there are other answers. There's various concepts, there's therapies, and something that Dr. Moran believes in is evidence-based. It's medical treatment combined with clinical therapy to treat mental health and substance use disorders. We can treat mental health disorders regardless whether you have a drug or alcohol problem. And I think that's the most people really understand is that generally, I think it's 65 to 70% of the time, research has shown that there's usually a type of co-occurring disorder. And could you maybe expound on some of the different types of therapies that are out there that people in the audience might not be aware of?
Well, the co-occurring disorders, a lot of time addiction is just a symptom of an untreated, unrecognized, undiagnosed mental health disorder, such as depression or anxiety, And those are issues, you know, that we need to be very much aware of and be aware of, particularly with when treating substance use,
that we need to look into and talk more about. And I think the thing that I look at as well is that coming from a medical background, and you sit on the Sober Home Task Force, and I was thinking about who's actually there. It's made up of concerned citizens. It's made up of attorneys. It's made up of providers. But something that we look for is, where is the medical community?
That's true. It's very disappointing not to see the medical community being involved here, because that they are the key. They are controlling this narcotic epidemic, that we're in opioid epidemic in our state and in our nation. And physicians need to be educated transparently, and as do the patients, okay? We need to make sure that every patient knows when they're being prescribed painkillers post-op for a toothache or whatever it is, that they are being prescribed pharmaceutical-grade synthetic heroin. If that conversation is had with the physician, you know what, the patient may change their mind. If our physicians would actually perhaps consider employing the recommendations of the American Medical Association for co-prescribing naloxone, which will reverse a drug poisoning overdose, that would be great, because that's another way to educate both the physician and the patient. Having that conversation, you know, if I was the patient, I'd say, well, isn't there something else you could give me that isn't as risky? So we need to look at the getting a true informed consent right, with regard to what a patient is being prescribed.
Well, and that's, I think, the thing that I listen to as you're talking is that we're referencing in the industry as patients. And that's really, from a standpoint, what we need to be concentrating and focusing in on, that these are people that have a medical condition, much similar as it would be as if they were diabetic, if they were cancer or something like that. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be going to a commercial break here. We're going to be listening to one of our sponsors, and we're going to continue our conversation. So for those of you who are joining us, this is the Family Center for Recovery show, and I'm your guest, Peter Nathan, and this is my good friend, Maureen Killian, and we're talking legislation. We're talking about what's going on with the House and the Senate and some of the things that have passed and where we're going to be going in the future. So we greatly appreciate you joining us and making us a part of your Sunday afternoon, and we'll be back in just a moment from our commercial break, which is coming up pretty soon. So I hope you're enjoying your day, whether that's in the car, at the beach, or if you're at the golf course or playing tennis or wherever you may be. So we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Family Center for Recovery show. Find out more about the Family Center for Recovery on Facebook.com/Family Center for Recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. We'll be right back.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
I'm Tiffany. I have some tips for you on how to quit smoking like I did. First, I did some reading about it. I found a lot of great advice on how to quit smoking and picked out the ways I thought would work best for me. I started by setting a quit date. Then I threw out my ashtrays, lighters, and matches. I did other things too, like exercising more, and it worked. But I'd still get cravings, especially on long car rides. To help me with that, I put a picture of my mother in my car. She died of lung cancer from smoking cigarettes when I was only 16. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter. That picture of my mother reminds me that I don't want to miss all the things my daughter is going to do in her life, including turning 17.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Welcome back to the Family Center for Recovery radio show. If you wish to share this broadcast with a friend, you'll find the link at the Family Center for Recovery's website, FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Well, thank you, and we're back for joining us here on this Sunday afternoon. You're listening to the Family Center for Recovery show, and I'm your guest, Peter Nathan. Or I'm your host, rather. I'm your host, and my guest is Maureen Killian. And what we're talking about is legislature. We're talking about things that are going on in both the House and the Senate here in the state of Florida. And we're recapping and going over some things. And what we were talking about as far as doctors and their involvement. So, Maureen, your thoughts.
Again, I just have to reiterate that it's this is a physician-controlled epidemic, and it's an addiction epidemic. This is not an abuse epidemic. These prescription pills do not need to be abused for you to become, you know, addicted. Taken as prescribed does and causes addiction. And if you read the label, FDA approved, taken as prescribed can cause addiction. So we have to be very, very careful with these medications that are prescribed so freely. And I'm very concerned not only with the younger population that is being extremely hit hard with addiction, but I'm also concerned with our Medicare patients. Those overdoses coming into our hospitals every day are just unacceptable. Any drug, legally prescribed drug poisoning overdose coming into our hospitals is absolutely unacceptable. It's preventable. These are controlled substances. That's an inherent part of a physician's medical license and DEA license, is to control controlled substances, something we've lost in this country.
And that's the thing that really caught me. I can't remember what commission or meeting I was at, and it dawned on me, and the information was presented, I believe it was about our elderly population and Medicare and painkillers. I call them painkillers. And that's an area that people really just aren't aware on. So could you explain a little bit more, Maureen, as far as...
Yes, you know, unfortunately, the prescription drug monitoring database is clouded in stigma of, you know, doctor shoppers. But if you look at the whole picture, the big picture, you know, our Medicare patients see probably up to five medical specialists, you know, from a cardiologist to a pulmonologist to a primary care to perhaps an orthopedic to perhaps, say, an arthritis doctor. Are they all aware of what's being prescribed, and are they all aware of the drug interactions? Are they aware of the FDA label changes that happen every a week or 2 weeks? So that prescription drug monitoring database is an extremely valuable tool for every physician to use for every patient, any patient. It doesn't matter. But what's happening is with the media, everybody thinks this is abuse. So there's a subconscious decision-making aspect when a physician is prescribing by perhaps looking at their patient, and it's, you know, Grandma Jane. Grandma Jane's not going to abuse her medication. Grandma Jane doesn't have to abuse her medication. Taking it as prescribed, as directed, can and does cause addiction. And abuse is a behavior of addiction. So we have to get the horse in front of the cart here and call this epidemic what it is. It's an addiction epidemic.
And that's the area where somebody such as Dr. Robert A. Moran, who's a triple board certified psychiatrist, that understands that this is really more so a brain disease. It involves, as far as things that prefrontal cortex and the effects that chemicals have as far as addiction, which is a different view than most people out there take when it comes to something like this.
So there's a doctor that actually is like supporting and aware of the effects that chemicals have that we swallow. We swallow more chemicals at the direction of our physician than we'll ever eat in our food. So who's this physician?
There actually is, and he's right over on Seacrest Boulevard in Lantana, Florida. His name is Dr. Robert A. Moran. So there is a doctor that does have and is dialed in as far as what our patients and what people actually need as far as treatment goes. what I'd like to talk to about a little bit more is that the demand and where we are for these prescriptions and things along those lines. And if we're able to curb our demand as far as the usage, then from a supply standpoint, that would probably have a dramatic impact and also be another route that we could go. From a standpoint of what other things that might be out there, people have pain, and I know there's different avenues that people could from a standpoint, because, look, it's a fact of life. As we get older, we have surgeries, we have things. So maybe from your medical perspective, could you share with us, our listeners, some of the other alternatives that are out there?
Well, there's plenty of other alternatives. You know, your therapy modules, you know, physical therapy and those types of things. The Alexander technique is another popular one. Yoga, and just mindfulness, thinking, you know, positive. Your mental health, if you're in a depressed mood, your pain could be exacerbated. But, you know, we've got to look at the difficulties in getting those services and the insurance industry and what they're willing to pay for. We've become so complacent that in society to just, like, pop a pill is just going to fix every problem. Okay, so if you have pain in your wrist and you're popping a pill, those chemicals just don't, you know, aren't smart enough just to go right to your wrist. In fact, they go through your brain.
So if you're just joining us on this Sunday afternoon, maybe you're out in the car, maybe you're at the beach, you have tuned in, and we thank you for joining us. And if you have been listening, you are listening to the Family Center for Recovery show, and I am your host, Peter Nathan. And with us today is Maureen Killian. We're talking legislation, and we're talking about solutions. We're talking about positive things that we can do as far as a society. I guess that's the other thing, too, is as a society, thinking back, I mean, I guess the answer has been, if somebody has a headache, what do? We take, what, an aspirin. And it seems as if, to a certain extent, that's been the answer, is that we defer to the pill and things along those lines to solve. But there are other alternatives. And from society, I think what we need to kind of look at and explore some of these other options that are out there. So, Maureen, your thoughts as far as things that we can possibly do, or awareness and getting people to see what else is available.
Absolutely. There's other alternatives. And we have got to get out of our conditioning that, you know, a pill solves everything, when in fact a pill, in many cases, due to the adverse effects, causes another pill, and those adverse effects causes another pill, and now you have interactions which causes another pill. So we have to be very cognizant of that, and we really need cooperation from our prescribing community to reevaluate what we are doing and how we are doing it. And particularly, it's well documented in the United States that our prescribing community needs to reevaluate their prescribing behaviors, because 80% of the entire world's opioids are consumed in the United States, yet the United States population is only 5%, less than 5% of the world's population. So obviously, I cannot fathom these numbers. They're true. But it, you know, we have a over-medicated society, and obviously a pandemic of pain in the United States. So what is it in the United States that's causing all this pain that isn't happening in other countries around the world?
You know, I guess the thing I look at is what are the other answers? And there are other answers. There's various concepts, there's therapies, and something that Dr. Moran believes in is evidence-based. It's medical treatment combined with clinical therapy to treat mental health and substance use disorders. We can treat mental health disorders regardless whether you have a drug or alcohol problem. And I think that's the most people really understand is that generally, I think it's 65 to 70% of the time, research has shown that there's usually a type of co-occurring disorder. And could you maybe expound on some of the different types of therapies that are out there that people in the audience might not be aware of? That,
well, the co-occurring disorders, a lot of time addiction is just a symptom of an untreated, unrecognized, undiagnosed mental health disorder, such as depression or anxiety, And those are issues, you know, that we need to be very much aware of and be aware of, particularly with when treating substance use disorders. You know, counting days abstinence is not going to resolve the underlying mental health disorders of depression and anxiety. That's why we need licensed healthcare professionals in the continuum of care. When treating substance use disorders, we need mental health psychiatrists, therapy, cognitive and behavioral therapy is a must. You know, it's just a must. I can't say anything more or anything stronger, to help us get through this epidemic and help curb this, addiction epidemic that we're in.
So really what we're looking at, what we're talking about here is this just has to be, it's medically related. Let's break it down that way. And then from that, we need to really look at as far as somebody's qualified. So yeah, I look at Dr. Robert A. Moran's triple board certified psychiatrist, addiction psychiatrist. And then from there, what do you do? Well, you know, before a patient is admitted into treatment, I mean, our team over at Family Center of medical and psychiatric professionals determine the best course of action for each family. Yeah, each plan is specialized dependent on the assessment. I guess that's a key thing. An assessment is done. So we're not taking for granted anything. We're sitting down, we're going over, we're asking, we're looking at medical records before a prescribed course of treatment, which is evidence-based, such as you've just talked about. The other thing, too, is that a psychiatrist, what are they able to do? They're able to monitor, look at from a standpoint as far as what medication somebody is taking, what properly they should be prescribed and what they should be taking. So, you know, that's really kind of a key thing. So when people are out there and they're looking for, who do they go to? And the question is, do they have a medical background? Do they understand what's going on out there? So, your thoughts as far as where we're at as far as treatment and things along those lines.
Well, I think treatment, you know, we have to look at it sometimes in a different fashion, because our success rates are not very good right now for those who are in treatment. And some of that has to do with the insurance industry and approving days and medical authorization that are archaic on the insurance industry's part. But the other aspect is that, you know, we have to look at the treatment that we're actually using and advocating for. Is it an alcoholic addicted model that we're trying to force an opioid addicted brain to? So, you know, I sometimes like to look at it, you know, are we putting a square peg in a round hole? Do we treat ovarian cancer the same as prostate cancer? Of course not. Do we even treat the same two patients with ovarian cancer with the same doses of chemotherapy or any other therapy, radiation? Of course not. So why in this treatment industry are we treating all patients the same way with an alcohol model when in fact it's an opioid addicted brain? So those are some of my concerns moving forward, and I think there's huge opportunities for the medical industry to jump on board.
With that, that's an excellent area for us to explore when we come back from our commercial break. And thanks again for joining us on your Sunday afternoon.
The Family Center for Recovery is the only facility in Florida owned and operated by an addiction psychiatrist, Dr. Robert Moran, and he's dedicated his life to helping the people no one else will. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
I'm Tiffany. I have some tips for you on how to quit smoking like I did. First, I did some reading about it. I found a lot of great advice on how to quit smoking and picked out the ways I thought would work best for me. I started by setting a quit date. Then I threw out my ashtrays, lighters, and matches. I did other things too, like exercising more, and it worked. But I'd still get cravings, especially on long car rides. To help me with that, I put a picture of my mother in my car. She died of lung cancer from smoking cigarettes when I was only 16. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter. That picture of my mother reminds me that I don't want to miss all the things my daughter is going to do in her life, including turning 17.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that other centers don't, including teens, expectant mothers, patients with mental health issues, or needing a medical detox. Call 855-202-4220.
Well, we are back, and thank you for joining us on your Sunday afternoon. And if you just tuned in, you are listening to the Family Center for Recovery show. And I'm your host, Peter Nathan. And with me here in the studio is a good friend of mine, Maureen Killian. And what we're talking about is various different models that are out there. And we're talking about basically for an opioid crisis, trying to institute an alcohol model as far as to solve and work with. And what are some of the things that you see that just aren't going to work as far as that model don't apply?
I think currently, traditionally, it's we're using an alcohol model, and if a patient relapses, they are further shunned and kicked out of a sober home or out of an environment. Okay, I'm adamantly opposed to that. To me, and it is really evidence-based, obviously, that something's not working in the treatment and that they need more help. They shouldn't be kicked out and demeaned and further ostracized, which hurts their mental health. They need to be put up a level of treatment, moved back into a higher level of care, rather than being kicked out. And we have got to look at that. That's people are dying because of this model that is not working.
And that's the important distinction that I'd like for our listeners to really understand as far as where Dr. Moran and where we are at Family Center for Recovery. Relapse doesn't mean failure. I mean, millions of people who struggle with mental health and or substance abuse disorders and ongoing treatment at different levels of care, this can happen, and we need to learn from it. We need to go back. We need to look at as far as the models. We need to look at as far as triggers. We need to look at cravings, and we need to look along those lines. I was talking with Dr. Rand yesterday, and I was asking him his thoughts and about sober homes. And his thought was that before somebody enters a sober home, they should have a letter from their doctor. And the letter would go over as far as what the person's been diagnosed with. And if for some reason they relapse, they don't just get kicked out to the street. And I'm going to be pretty honest and straightforward with it. That's what happens. No, it's like Maureen's saying, we need to bring them back into care. They need to have their primary physician contacted and made aware. We need to help this person. Okay, and that's a distinction. That's a difference. So what else do you see, Maureen?
Well, I find that, these are patients, and we need to have respect for that status and treat them as patients. And I like to make a comparison, for our diabetic patients, who are being admitted, or for hyperglycemia, high blood sugars, because they didn't follow their diet plan or whatnot. Do we in our hospital say, oh, no, we're going to treat you. We're going to kick you out on the street because you didn't listen. You didn't not eat that piece of birthday cake or something? No, we don't do that. We treat it. Okay, and that's what we're asking for in the continuum of care of addiction treatment, is that empathy and compassion and better treatment than what we're receiving, because it's data proven that what we're doing isn't working, and it needs to work much better. Another issue I have is when one wants to seek help. A lot of the communities up the Northeast Corridor, Massachusetts and Rhode Island, New Hampshire, it's okay for someone who's suffering from substance use disorder to go to the police department and ask for help. I'm just flabbergasted that this is how we treat a medical condition in this country. What other disease is it okay to go to the police department to ask for help? Okay, I'm thankful. Don't get me wrong. I am so thankful that the police departments are stepping up to the plate to help with this epidemic. But they are not physicians. They have no medical training. And these folks need to be in the medical field. I just think it's, you realize somebody has an order and you go to the police department.
And here's the interesting thing. I saw a recent documentary and it was about, I'm not even going to pronounce this one right. So if you're from Gloucester, Massachusetts, But the point being is that their program is that if somebody is turning in their works, they're turning in any heroin that they have, and police officers will find them a bed and they will get them into treatment. And it's an extremely successful program. And you know what? I was watching that documentary. And I was talking with my mother. My mother's retired now, but she was the first woman police officer in my hometown, which is in Racine, Wisconsin. She went on to become a social worker, psychotherapist, and then family lawyer. She's a little bit of an overachiever. But she said to me, after watching that documentary, she said, you know, they're acting more like social workers